chapter 11, Nahash the Ammonite and Jabesh Gilead, oh yeah, we'll make a treaty all right, but I'm going to poke out all your right eyes. Saul has been appointed, anointed king. He gets 330,000 people together, and they go and they take Nahash the Ammonite, and he has a bad day. And the word discomfited comes up, as we'll see, I think, next week, too. We're going to be in chapter 12 and 13, 14, 15, 16, some of my favorite chapters. But these chapters are good, too. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff here. So that's where we left it. Chapter 11, verse 15, all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. And there they sacrificed sacrifices of peace offering before the Lord, and there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. Saul's a good guy. Now we're going to start seeing some chinks in his armor, okay? Saul commits suicide. Saul, before his death, he tries to kill David. He tries to kill his son Jonathan. He sees a witch at Endor, okay? The label good guy is going to dissipate. But is he just who he is and we didn't see it all along? Or is he taking steps in rebellion away from God? You can make up your own mind. But here we'll see some of the things tonight that, like I say, chinks in the armor. Chapter 12, verse 1, Samuel said unto all Israel, Behold, I have hearkened unto your voice and all that ye said unto me, and have made a king over you. And now, behold, the king walketh before you, and I am old and gray-headed, and behold, my sons are with you. His sons are dogs. They're not dogs like Eli's sons are dogs, but they're wicked men. They take bribes. They pervert justice. They're wicked men. You know, they're saying, behold, my sons are with you, and I think everyone's probably saying, yeah, thanks, no thanks, right? And I have walked before you from my childhood unto this day. Now, this is important. Behold, here I am. Witness against me before the Lord and before his anointed. Whose ox have I taken, or whose ass have I taken, or whom have I defrauded, or whom have I oppressed, or of whose hand have I received any bribe? Now, his sons couldn't say that, right? To blind mine eyes therewith. And I'll restore it you. You come to me, you tell me where I've messed up, and I'll make that right. And they said, Thou hast not defrauded us, nor oppressed us, neither hast thou taken aught of any man's hand. And he said unto them, The Lord is witness against you, and his anointed is witness this day. His anointed being Saul. When you talk about God's anointed, we're usually talking about Jesus Christ. His anointed king is the idea, and it's Saul, is witness this day that you have fought aught, you have found aught in my hand. They answered, He is witness. Hey, you haven't taken anything from us. You've been a sterling character. You've been a godly man. Yet, isn't that what we all want at the end of the day? A reputation that's above reproach. And here's Samuel. You know, he hasn't. Why is he doing that? Well, we'll come to that. And Samuel said unto the people, It is the Lord that advanced Moses and Aaron that brought your fathers up out of the land of Egypt. Now, the whole thing here in wanting a king is they had a king. And they said, well, no, we don't want that king, God. We want a king that we can see. And I'm sure Samuel's taking that personal. God had told him, don't take it personal. They haven't rejected you. They've rejected me. But he's saying, look, what about me? What's my character like? And they said, you're Samuel. You're all that. We know who you are. You haven't defrauded anybody. You haven't taken anybody. Everyone knows that. And the picture is, well, where do you think I got that? How do you think I ended up the way I ended up? You may be impressed with me or not. If you're to the degree you're impressed by me is the degree you don't know me. As you get to know me better, I start shrinking. You start, I can't stand that much, you know what I mean, close examination. But at first glance, I probably have a pretty good reputation. Where do you think I got it? I was a scoundrel. I tell everybody that. Have I ever not said that? Ever said, you know, when God saved me, I was pretty close to perfect anyway. And now that I'm saved, I've really kind of arrived. I think we all know that, right? I don't even joke like that. I've always said, no, Susan's sitting, usually she's nodding at this point profusely. I wasn't a good guy. Now I love the Lord and I teach the Bible. What happened? Well, let me tell you. God happened. You're saying, Adam, I know. I totally understand. That's my story too. And this is what he's saying. This is why he's bringing up his character. He's trying to say, you know, God's men will have God's character. Now, therefore, I think he isn't leaving this idea alone that when you've rejected. I mean, look at how it starts out. I've hearkened unto your voice and all that you said unto me and have made a king over you. I don't think he's celebrating. I don't think he's happy about it. There has been a tremendous victory. That's good because God. Now, therefore, stand still that I may reason with you before the Lord of all the righteous acts of the Lord, which he did to you and to your fathers. You think I'm righteous? Let me tell you about God. His crowning attribute is he's holy. Is he righteous? Of course he's righteous. Does God sin? Never. He sets the standard about what's right and what's wrong. And he doesn't go past the standard that he sets. Have you ever had a mom or a dad at a time when they said, do what I say, don't do as I do? My parents waving the cigarette in my face and telling me never to smoke. And, well, I see that you're smoking, Dad or Mom. And they're like, well, you do as I say, you don't do as I do. I think we've probably all resorted to that. As parents, we are not perfect. Has God resorted to that? Never. He's totally righteous. And here's what he's saying. Stand still that I may reason with you before the Lord of all the righteous acts of the Lord which he did to you and to your fathers. Not that he spoke about, that he did. When Jacob was coming to Egypt and your fathers cried unto the Lord, then the Lord sent Moses and Aaron, which brought forth your fathers out of Egypt and made them dwell in this place. And when they forgot the Lord their God, he sold them into the hand of Sisera, captain of the host of Hazor, and into the hands of the Philistines, and into the hand of the king of Moab, and they fought against him. Who was the king of Moab? Eglon, anyone? And they fought against him, and they cried unto the Lord and said, we have sinned because we have forsaken the Lord, and we have served Balaam and Ashtaroth. But now deliver us out of the hand of the enemies, and we will serve thee. And the Lord sent Jerubbaal, and Bedan, and Jephthah, and Samuel, and delivered you out of the hand of your enemies on every side, and you dwelt safe. What's the point? Rehearsing this. God is good. And you follow him and good things happen. You rebelled against him, bad things happen. You turned to him and cried to him, and he still showed up and still rescued you. Have you as a parent, again, because God is a parent, he's our father, have you as a parent said, they made their bed, let them lie in it. It's the only way to teach them. If you're a mom, you're less likely to do that. My boys have a mom and a dad. Mike doesn't, I can't remember the last time I said, yeah, he'll learn. He'll figure it out. From early age, Mike figured it out. He's godly and he's bright. Now his brother's still writing his story. And I think, well, he's bright too. He's got to figure it out. And every time I think he's bottomed out. He just grabs a shovel and keeps digging. It's incredible, right? And mom is likely to try to make his hard landing soft because that's who moms are. That's what they do. I'm not going to try to talk her out of that or tell her. I could tell her, don't be like that. I could tell her, like, stop being you. It wouldn't really work, right? God never does that. She's more godly than me in that, okay, we've learned, we're sorry, God, save us. And he always does. Remarkably. And he keeps sending these deliverers. Jephthah and Samuel, and delivered you out of the hand of your enemies on every side, and ye dwelled safe. And when ye saw that Nahash, the king of the children of Ammon, came against you, that's just recent, right? He said to me, nay, but a king shall reign over us when the Lord your God was your king. You remember when the Philistines came and they all were about to attack because he called everyone, it was at Saul's original coronation, and he sacrifices a sucking lamb, a little lamb that still hasn't been weaned yet, right? And what happened? The ground shaking, lightning striking, the enemy's discomfited. Nobody's bringing their weapons. Nobody's, oh, we're going to battle the Philistines. No, we're going to coronate a king, and God shows up and wins the day. I don't know that I'd want somebody who's got a better record than that. You wanted a king to reign over you when the Lord your God was your king. Now, therefore, behold the king whom you have chosen and whom you have desired. And behold, the Lord hath set a king over you. Saul's listening to all this. I'm wondering if what he's thinking. I was just looking for my donkeys. Don't blame me, dude. If you will fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall both you and also the king that reigneth over you, and continue following the Lord your God. But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall the hand of the Lord be against you, as it was against your fathers. Now listen, you did wrong, and God's saying, I understand, I get it. Follow me. King, follow me. We need obedience. I'll open the heavens, there'll be blessing. There'll be peace, there'll be prosperity, there'll be record bumper crops every year, your cows will calve, your goats will kid, I know how to bless. I want obedience. Okay, we took a step sideways here, I get that, but what I'm still looking for is obedience, and I'll still bless. It wasn't like, okay, you want a king? You got a king. All right, now we'll see. He told them what was going to happen. He will take, he's going to take your sons. We'll see that, I think it's next week. Every time he saw a man who was young and fit, he immediately inducted him into his army. But here at the beginning, it's not set up. You messed up and it's definitely going to fail now. I'll hearken, I'll bless. Now, therefore, stand and see this great thing which the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest today? I will call unto the Lord, and he shall send thunder and rain. You don't want thunder and rain in the wheat harvest. That's you want a nice sunny day to get all your wheat. May-ish wheat harvest. He shall send thunder and rain that you may perceive and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord in asking you a king. So Samuel called on the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. Always fear the Lord. God hasn't given us a spirit of fear except towards the Lord. That spirit of fear is trust. It's reverential. It's I don't dare cross him. It's certainly love. I almost don't want to say this. If you had a good dad, you understand what love and fear is all in one person. I don't know how else to say it. My dad loved us. He never was very. We know it because he worked hard. You know, if you ever ask my dad, do you love us? bust my back and I work three jobs and I put food on the table. You know, that's his love for us. He's very effusive with his daughters, not with his sons. You know, we were in a huggy-kissy family because he was kind of like, you know, men don't do that, you know, old school. But I knew he loved us. Did I love him? Yes. Did I fear him? Yes. When Mom said, wait till your father gets home, she was not blessing me and she was not trying to. A fearful thing was going to happen when Dad got home because I had probably acted outside of protocol and I wasn't on my best behavior, and now I was going to get it, you know what I mean? So I understand this pretty well, fear and love all together. And it was along the lines of obedience. Because if I was not doing anything wrong, generally I didn't get smacked. One time. He's on a business trip. He's going to Colorado. He never went anywhere. I don't even know why he went to Colorado. It was for a whole week. And I'm sitting there watching TV, and he comes behind me and just smack around the back of the head. Not real hard, but I get my attention. And I was like older. I was like 12. I'm like, hey, what's that for? And he goes, just in case you do something when I'm gone. And he was clowning around. I knew he was clowning around. But usually if I wasn't, and I wasn't crying at that point. It wasn't like that, like kind of a smack, you know what I mean? But if usually I was in the clear if I wasn't doing anything wrong. If I was, you know, raking up the yard or taking out the garbage, or there wasn't punishment to be given out. I was doing my chores or whatever. So, and it devolved along the lines of obedience. When I disrespected my mom, you don't want to do that. Dad would be a dread then. And I understand obedience and I understand love and fear all together. So you fear the Lord and your Samuel called on the Lord. The Lord sent thunder and rain that day, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. And all the people said unto Samuel, pray for thy servants unto the Lord thy God that we die not. For we have added unto all our sins this evil to ask a king. That's good. I think he got the proper message across. We've done evil. But what happened? Pray to the Lord your God? Why isn't the Lord our God? Saul will say the same thing, by the way. And Samuel said unto the people, fear not. Ye have done all this wickedness, yet turn not aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. And turn ye not aside, for then should ye go after vain things, which cannot profit nor deliver, for they are vain. I have to comment on this. Anything that's not godly and good is vain. Now sometimes, do you have a hobby? Probably a vain thing. I think people need a hobby. I mean, I think is gardening, is that a vain thing? Yeah, I can buy my vegetables. I really enjoy it. It's not because I love organic or I grow so many things that we're taking care of for the year. We put up like 3,000 cans and we're good right through until the next. Nothing like that. It's a hobby and I enjoy it. It's really vanity. Golf. Oh, well, the exercise. Stop it. Stop it. No. We do things that are vain, and maybe they're good for our mental health or good for our overall. But I think the things that are important are things concerning the Lord. You know, I could not garden. I could give up my golf game. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, I could... But I'm not going to give up serving the Lord. I mean, that's... But if you go aside after vain things, which cannot profit nor deliver, they are vain. Here he's talking about going after other gods. I mean, if you want to read the context. For the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake. Sunday morning, we were talking about the Lord as shepherd. Satan ain't able to snatch you out of my hand. That's, by the way, you're in the Father's hand. No one's able to snatch you out, right? The Lord will not forsake his people. Well, what if I forsake him? The Lord will not forsake his people. Why does he have a Sisera show up, or an Eglon, or so the people will cry out to him and turn from him, turn back to him. He will not forsake his people. I don't know how I can, maybe I do it and put it in a form of a haiku or a limerick, or I don't know how to get it across to us that it will seal it in all the time. And I'm not talking to you half as much as I'm talking to me, because I have the same tendency you have. I haven't been really on fire lately. I think God's probably given up on me. It's so satanic. It's so satanic. I'm a father. I haven't given up on my children. When will you? Mom, when will you give up on your children? Adam, what are you talking about? What are you blathering about? We don't give up on children. But somehow God gives up on us because we're having a bad hair day or something. We think God's fed up and he's all done with us. The Lord will not forsake his people. Why? Because they're so cute and we're so cunning and he had to go down there and save all of us. He loved us so much. He gets a warm fuzzy. No. For his great name's sake. Because he can't say, I will never leave you or forsake you, and then leave you or forsake you. Suddenly his name's not so great because he doesn't keep his word. Now, let that never be said of God. Of course he keeps his word. Remember Sunday morning? And scripture cannot be broken. For it hath pleased the Lord to make you his people. I could spend a lot of time here. Why are you God's people? It pleased him. Don't hate this verse. For thy pleasure they are and were created. What's that? A Revelation 4 or 5? They're praising God and they're talking about he's created all things for his pleasure. For your pleasure? That's a secondary thing. Because I always think like this. God's up there creating, and he creates like a kiwi, okay? Why? Because God's saying, you know, for eternity past, I've always been jonesing for a kiwi. Because he's saying, wait till Adam gets hold of one of these. His eyes are going to roll back in his head. He's going to say, oh, wow, God, you're so awesome. Or whatever your major, whatever. Onions or garlic or whatever you think is wonderful, wonderful. Me, everything. I like it all. God, you're awesome. It pleases God to bless us because he's our loving heavenly Father. He created man, and he's saying, for thy pleasure they are and were created. When did he create him? Day six. His first full day of man being existing, what happened? Shabbat, the seventh day. God refrained, he rested, scripture rested. He refrained from creating anymore. He stopped creating, and what did he do? He spent the day with his creation. That's the pleasure of God. It pleased God to save us. He's not going to forsake his people, his great name's sake, because it pleased the Lord to make you his people, Samuel says to Israel. And Adam and a lot of people before me have said to the church. Moreover, as for me, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you, but I will teach you the good and the right way. Oh, and this Samuel, because we're talking about a good shepherd, and it's still on my mind, is Samuel a good shepherd? I'm going to teach you the right way. And God forbid that I should ever stop praying for you. Okay, you messed up in asking for a king. I get it. Did I stop praying? Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. And add this to your own collection of verses that you want to think about all the time. God forbid that I should sin and stop praying for you. Only fear the Lord and serve him in truth. Again, call for obedience, fear the Lord, obey, serve him in truth with all your heart, for consider how great things he hath done for you. But if ye shall still do wickedly, you shall be consumed, both ye and your king. Does that happen? Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Again, Saul starts out really good, then not so much. Chapter 13, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel. He had 330,000, right? So 3,000 doesn't seem like too much. Whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. Now, I want you to understand something. We've just been introduced to his son, Jonathan. This is the heir to the throne. This is a good and godly, all the way through the story. This is one of the, he's one of my favorite people in Scripture. He's right up there with David. He's a luminary. He is almost without peer. He's an incredible, well, what does his name mean? Jonathan. Let's break it down. Anyone know what Nathan is? Netan? Like Netanyahu? Gift. Gift. Anyone know Yah? Netan? Yanathan? That's his, huh? Gift of God, or gift from God, I think that's probably the way I put it. God's gift, or can we put it that way? That's his name. Is he? Oh, he really is. You know, Samuel, great prophet, great man, godly, didn't turn out to be a great dad, okay? Mrs. Samuel, we never even hear her, right? Is he a great husband? I don't know. Don't want to go there. Don't have enough scriptural evidence, but I think he's not a great dad. I think he learned how to dad from Eli, and Hophni and Phinehas weren't wonderful results of Eli's training. But I don't think I don't know where Jonathan learned how to be a good and godly man, because we're going to see Saul is not a man of faith. He's not a man of faith. That's his problem. He doesn't want to trust God, and then things go sideways, and he's always looking for somebody to blame, and he rarely, if ever, takes any responsibility for any of his activity. He's always trying to blame shift, and we'll see that. And by the way, wouldn't you have 2,000 with your son and 1,000 with you? I just saying, right? I don't know. But he's got 2,000 men with him, and he's got 1,000 with Jonathan. And Jonathan, verse 3, smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba. And the Philistines heard of it. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. What is that? How's he caught? What? What? Let the Hebrews hear? That's what the Philistines call the Jewish people, the Hebrews. And I don't want to make too much of that and oversell that. It just seems to me, really, hardly anyone else in Israel ever calls Jewish people Hebrews. It's not an insult. It's not a pejorative term. It's just, what? And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel was had an abomination with the Philistines, and the people called together after Saul to Gilgal. Now, they hear say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines. Had they? Had he? No. Did he set the record straight? I don't think so. I think he likes people thinking that he's an awesome dude, and yeah, them Philistines, they were no match for me. And what's Jonathan doing? Jonathan is a crazy man. He loves the Lord, and he has faith. He's like David in very many ways. I want you to understand something. David probably isn't even born at this point. There's a big age difference between Jonathan and David, and they were like besties, no doubt. But they were kindred spirits, and they both had incredible faith in God. Boldness and courage, and just they were men after God's own heart. It said that of David, but I think it's true of Jonathan. Jonathan's like, I can't stand this Philistine garrison here. I'm just going to do something about it. I don't know what. And he's off on his own. He's got his own 1,000 guys, apparently, and stuff like this. And he's just, You know, the spirit of Popeye comes on him. I've taken all I can stands and I can't stands no more. I'm not sure Spinach was involved at any point, but he just goes off on the Philistines and he wins. And he's, later on we'll see his trust in God, but here it's only kind of alluded to. But I don't know if he, the preparation, the prayer, I don't know any of that stuff. He turns out to be an incredible man of faith. So now Israel was had an abomination with the Philistines. And I'm thinking Saul saying, yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Don't do us any more favors. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel. 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash eastward from Beth-Aven. Does anyone have anything besides 30,000 chariots? Yeah, it's 6,000 horsemen and the people as multitude as the, but does anyone get another number next to the chariots? Because some people say 3,000 and there's a little bit of a controversy. How many? 30,000, 3,000? I don't know. I don't care a lot, right? And people as the sandwiches on the seashore in multitude. In other words, beyond number, right? And they came up and pitched in Michmash eastward from Beth-Aven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, and the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and in rocks and in high places and in pits. There's your mighty army there, Saul. Oh, my goodness. I guess it would be scary. All them horsemen, all them chariots, all them people. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. They crossed the Jordan, right? Gad and Gilead are on the east side of Jordan. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him, trembling. And he tarried 7 days, according to the set time that Samuel had appointed, but Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. Uh-oh. Bad mojo. And we don't know too much Bible, but we know that he's a king and he's not supposed to be doing the office of priest or prophet. Even Samuel. Samuel is a prophet, but he's in the priest line. He's Levitical. We looked at that before. Yep. Bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. It came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication of the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. Did you get all the excuses? I saw the people were scattered from me. You know, it's really the people's fault. And and by the way, you didn't come when you said you were gonna. I think he did. I mean, he's making the offering and Samuel walks up. In 10 minutes, seems like you would have waited. You'd have been golden, right? And that the Philistines gathered. So it's your fault, really, Samuel, if you think about it. And the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. So it's really the Philistines' fault. Therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. If you really think about it, it's kind of God's fault. How come he has to be like this anyway, where you have to always kill something so he'll bless? I mean, think about it, right? So it's the people's fault. It's the Philistines' fault. It's your fault. And I think ultimately it's God's fault. Me, I had to do it. I forced myself and offered a burnt offering. And it kind of reminds me of Aaron. I just threw the gold in the oven. This cow hopped out. What do you want from me anyway, Mo? It's kind of almost the same ridiculous. What could I do? I had to do it. And Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Does that mean stupidly? Sometimes it does. But remember, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And it doesn't get anything. A lot of times when we're talking about fool, it's not talking about somebody who's mentally deficient. It's talking about somebody who's morally deficient. You've acted like there is no God, like there are no commandments, like you don't have anybody to answer to. I think that's what's being said here. Have you done something stupid? Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I like Samuel because he's so tactful. You know, he's the king, right? He's going to say, off with his head. He doesn't care, right? Hey, dummy, smarten up. Wake up and smell the coffee, right? He's letting him have it. You've done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart. Who's that? David, a man after God's own heart. David, at this point, is probably not born. I know we're going to see him in a couple chapters. You've got to remember, Saul reigns for, I think it's 40 years, 42 years, actually. So this is like the third year in his reign. David is anointed. David becomes the king at 30. I think he's 16-ish when he goes up against Goliath. He's on the run from like Saul for like about 13 years. If you do all the math, this is early in Saul's reign. David's probably not even alive. And God already knows about a guy named David who he knew from the foundation of the earth, like he knew you, like he sought you, like he loved you before you were even alive day one. Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. And Samuel arose and gat him up from Gilgal unto Gibeah of Benjamin. And Saul numbered the people that were present with him, about 600 men. I don't understand what the problem is. That's twice as much as Gideon had. I'm serious. We're going to see Jonathan gets it. He's going to say when he attacks the next garrison of the Philistines, he says, so it's him and his armor bearer, right? And he must know the verses like one will chase 1,000, two will put tens of thousands to flight. He must know those verses. He must say, you know, hey, armor bearer guy, and we don't know this guy. I like this guy too because he's all out there. Him and Jonathan, they're go-getters. You know, the Lord can save with few or with many. We don't have to have, 80 million in our army. God could wipe out Philistines, just me and you. What do you think? Let's go. Okay, do all that's in your heart, as armor bearer says. That's the next week. But isn't that, Saul doesn't get it. Saul doesn't. He thinks he's got to outnumber the enemy. The race isn't to the quick. The battle isn't to the strong. Okay? I hope we get that. What will God do with one person, man or woman, who is totally devoted to him, out there for the Lord? I'll do anything you ask me to do, Lord. What could God do? Oh, my goodness. So he has 600 men. Verse 16, Saul and Jonathan, the son of the people that were present with them, abode in Gibeah of Benjamin. But the Philistines encamped in Michmash. And the spoilers, that's the raiders, okay? They came out of the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned unto the way that leadeth to Ophrah, unto the land of Shual. Another company turned the way to Beth-Hor. Another company turned to the way of the border that looketh to the valley of Zeboam toward the wilderness. Now, these raiding parties, they go out and they get food and provisions and stuff. They got to keep the army provided for, right? Now there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears. Being disarmed is a reproach, just in case you're wondering, in case you're one of these Second Amendment people. Being disarmed is a reproach. I thank God that there was been several smiths in my life that put a sword in my hand. I couldn't have ever done it alone. You know, I could name them all and stuff. Most of them I haven't met. You know, Ken Graves is, you know, I've met him. You guys have ever heard of Ken Graves, you know. He's definitely one of them. You know, guys like Chuck Missler, you know, just or something like that. Or Joe Foch, I have met. But I still listen to a lot of Joe Foch's stuff. There have been smiths along the way who have, well, talking about smiths, why don't we talk about Chuck Smith, okay? That's a smith, right? He's blessed us all. So they wouldn't let him have any implements, because if the Hebrews have a smith, then they're going to start making swords and spears. But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share and his coulter and his axe and his mattock. Yet they had a file for the mattocks and for the coulters and for the fox and for the axes and to sharpen the goads. Imagine going out to battle with an ox goad. It's a wooden stick with like a bayonet tied onto the end of it. You poke your ox with it when he's not moving fast enough, when he wants to lay down on the job, or a donkey or something like that. Come on, keep plowing, you know, Seabiscuit or whatever. You know what I mean? And that's an ox goad. Imagine going to battle with that. Or colt. Imagine using like a pitchfork. I got a dirt pitchfork. It's not like those real skinny tines like the hay. It's kind of substantial. You can turn over dirt with it. I think get that thing razor sharp. That would cause some mayhem. But it's not a sword. It's not a spear. It's just, and you can't really use it aside. You got to like jab somebody straight forward with it and stuff. I haven't envisioned doing this. I just thought about it when I was reading over this. You know, it's not something like, hey, I want to go to battle with this because someone will just pull out their gun and I'll be all done. But they didn't have guns. They had sharp pieces of metal. That's what they had, okay? They had bows, they had arrows, but that was it. So, and apparently someone comes up with a file. He must have been working day and night. Little half round, you know, metal file, right? So it came past in the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan. But Saul and Jonathan, his son, was there found. So they're armed and nobody else. Everyone else comes up with farm implements. Is that okay? Listen, Gideon's guys had what? A clay pot and a firebrand, what do you want to call it, a torch? David had a sling with a stone in it. Nuclear weapons, not quite effective in what God wanted to do. What do you got? Because we're not fighting Philistines, but that's not to say we're not in a battle. And it's a serious battle. It's a battle for your life. I don't want to freak you out. I don't want to scare you. God doesn't give us a spirit of fear. But we have somebody who's prowling around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. I call him last week, steal, kill, destroy boy from John chapter 10. Jesus was saying that about the Pharisees, but I always think, well, where did the Pharisees get it? That's demonic. Stealing, killing, destroying. He wants to steal your joy. He wants to kill you, your marriage. He wants to rob you. He wants to take all the blessings away from you. And he will take your life if he could. He can't run the risk that you will tell somebody about Jesus and lead somebody to a saving knowledge of the Lord. He's not ambivalent about our spirituality at all. And people say, I don't know, Adam, really, you believe in a literal Satan? Yes, I do. Jesus seemed to also, so I'm in kind of good company there. And if you don't believe in Satan, just try to oppose him for a little while. You will definitely run headlong into him. You know how it is, and everyone here is like, well, yeah, tell me about it. But again, this is going to be on the radio and you know, podcast and everything else. So yes, there's an actual, he's not just, kind of an evil. You know, some people do evil, and he's the embodiment of it. He's not a real, he doesn't really exist. He's just, he typifies evil in our lives and bad choices because we don't hang out with the right crowd or whatever gobbledygook they're peddling now. No, we have to learn battle. We have to know how to battle. We've been given. Of course, the armor of the Lord in Ephesians 6 is a wonderful study. If you haven't been there a while, I commend it to you. But God's given us a sword for a reason. And all that helmet of salvation, breastplate of righteousness, shoes shod with the preparation of the gospel peace, it's all there. And you do well to know what's at your disposal. Jonathan and Saul, they have swords. Good. And the garrison of the Philistines went out to the passage of Michmash. Garrison means army here, by the way. Garrison, you make it sound like, a couple dozen. No, remember, by the seashore, innumerable, big numbers, okay? So that ends there, and we won't start chapter 14. Chapter 14, one of the funnest chapters, and we're going to really see who Jonathan is. And we're really going to start seeing who Saul is. And it's not very flattering. It's very flattering for Jonathan. Saul, not so much.